Rob, was it?
Hi.
Hi. Do you understand Norwegian?
No.
No. Do we have anyone? Sorry. Is it all right?
Go ahead, speak in Norwegian.
Well, I can't either. I speak Swedish. Do we have anyone that could translate, maybe?
No, it's okay.
Okay, great. Well, very welcome. My name is Jonas. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Jonas.
I'll do this half in English and half in Swedish, maybe. First of all, thank you, Arnur, for asking me in such a short notice. I will try to make justice to Torbjörn, who is going to be here this night, but I'm not sure if I can reach his standards. I'm very grateful for AA and for this group in particular. This is my home group and has been my home group for almost as long as I have been sober. My sobriety date is November 22nd, 2004. So, with God's will and your help, I'll be 10 years in not so long. Well, anyway, I was having dinner at a very dear friend of mine's when I got the call from Arnor. I helped her to change the tires on the car, so I got a dinner back. And I was at hers having dinner when Arnor called, and she has a daughter, 5-6 years old, and I was like, okay. I asked Arnor, do you have a theme for me tonight? And he said, you can talk about anything. So I asked this little girl, 6 years old, if you were going to talk in front of people, what were you going to talk about? She goes, I'd talk about how it is to eat sweets. Okay. And then I got interested, so I said, hold that thought. I'll just get a pen and paper and I'll, you know. What does sweet make you? Sweet, how do you react to sweets? And she says, I get just this perfect crazy. I spreller runt på gulvet. I'm standing on my head in the sofa. Maybe I break a window and jump out. And I go, you know, doing kullerbytter, somersaults. Yeah. I was like, okay, good. I can relate to that. And how does it feel when you had the sweets? And then she says, then I feel I need to be a little bit on my own and I'm very thirsty. I'm dry. I'm dry in my mouth. I was like, okay, I could relate to that. Sweets, alcohol, blah, blah. It's maybe it's not. So I got my start there. And also I want to congratulate someone with 6 months. Very nice. And a special congratulations to you, Tarje. It's been a privilege to know you all these years. Very much. So where to start? How it was, what happened, and how it is today. As you know, I grew up in a pretty normal, crazy home. My father was an alcoholic. My mother was 120% codependent, and I was there somewhere in the middle. And I remember when I was 4, I decided that I will not be able to trust other people. Something in me said, it wasn't their fault, it was just me, my way to react. I said, I fucking had it with this shit. I'm going to solve my own problems. And I solved it by being aggressive, feeling a hole in my stomach, hole in my heart. I peed in my bed till I was seven. I always got in a fight. I had this, you know, special klippkort for young psychological, you know, I had to sit in this cage playing with toys and be watched by psychologists or psychiatrists, and they didn't see a major problem in me, and, you know, I had some friends and everything. So, had my first drink. I started late, I think. 9 years old. Didn't really do it for me. But then when I was 14, I started drinking. I got my first really drunk, and then I was drunk once a week until I was 16. And from there, I was drunk twice a week. And when I was 16 and a half, I tried drugs for the first time. It didn't really do it for me, like, it was more of a friend thing. But then when when alcohol became this instant relief, I don't know when that happened. But I know when it happened, when I felt that I needed to be alone a little while, and I was dry in my mouth. That was about 17 years old. And then from there on, I started drinking more and more. I was pretty good at school. I had friends all over, many girlfriends, not as in girlfriends, but friends that were girls. I hang out with the cool guys, I hang out with the geeks. I was in the middle in school, did military service, did very well, did special forces, became an officer, and everything. I had everything working for me. I graduated from university, came in, worked in the financial business in Stockholm. I had a couple of years in the States, and I had everything working for me. But then partying started taking over more and more. I had this constant dissatisfaction going around all over. The longing for more. What I know now, what I didn't know then, it was a thirst, a spiritual thirst. It was not a thirst for alcohol in particular. It was the thirst for being a whole person, being something that belonged to, being a part of, instead of being departed or off-parted or whatever. So, how it really ended, I'm sure you've heard this story before. I lost my job, I lost my car, I lost my apartment, I lost everything. And I lost my girlfriend, and I was totally devastated. I didn't know where to go. I thought I was in love, but it showed that I was really not in love. I was just afraid of being alone. So this was summer of 2004, so I Googled retreat. I found this yoga retreat. And I thought, okay, that's going to solve all my problems. So I went to this hardcore yoga retreat with Swami Yanakananda in Småland. And I came straight out of a wedding. And I'll tell you, it was a new experience. I came there in a suit to this yoga retreat. I parked my car that I borrowed in front of the house, and I honked two times. I wanted to make a great entrance. Out comes this guy in orange clothes. I was like, what the fuck? Okay. So I parked my car, and they stripped me of everything except for some clothes. And, you know, 2 weeks later, tarm skölid och tystnad och everything, I came out, and I came in there searching for a new light, and I came out with a new light in my eyes. I totally detoxed and totally knew. And I knew how to yoga and I knew how to meditate and levitate and, you know, be close to whatever you're supposed to be close to. And I had this light for about 5 minutes after release. But during those 5 minutes, I managed to... come up with some pretty crazy things. I was so much obsessed by this girl that I lived with in Stockholm, who now had moved to Norway because she was from here. She moved back, and I called her every day and blah blah blah. And then I came out from there and I called her up and I said, "You know what? If you watch this TV show now, I promise I will never call you again." She said, "Is this sure? Is this a promise?" "It is a promise." She said, "Sweet deal," and hung up on me. And I was warming my way into this TV show, and I had this huge sign with me, and I was standing there like this. And this is broadcasted in Norway, in Sweden, in Denmark, in Finland. And I'm standing there like this, and there's 20,000 people there, and everybody around me is like, "Oh, poor bastard." And on this sign, it said her name, and it said, "Please come back. I miss you so." I was totally doing it for making a fool out of myself. But you know how obsession of the mind works. You do whatever you can to get out of this empty longing, whatever. You do whatever you can. And I thought she was my solution. And just before that, I thought the yoga retreat was my solution. And I'd been thinking that alcohol had been my solution all the time. And she thought it was very romantic. So, and I kept my promise. I didn't call her back, but she called me. She said, "Hey, you want to come over to Norway and say hello?" So I got invited to Norway, and I was like, made it. I'm very good at manipulating people, even still. So I managed to manipulate her, inviting me back to Norway. And I came back here, and we had a very good time for about 90 minutes. And then for the rest of the weekend, both she and I knew why she moved back to Norway and I was in Stockholm. So I went back to Stockholm and I continued my partying. I partied pretty good. And after a 3-day long party on my own in my apartment with no furniture in it, I had it. I thought I was going to shoot myself in the head, and I had my rifle still. And during this time, I've been convicted to jail, and I've been, you know, everything just went down the drain. And I had this kind of, what do you call it, the criminology. They make a small psychological profile on you if I was able to keep my guns and keep my hunting rifles and keep my driving license and everything. And these two socionomer, I think it's called, I was like, "Yeah, sure." And they said, "This guy doesn't have a problem." And I was able to keep my driving license and my guns. So I was sitting there, I was loading my gun and my rifle, and I was going to shoot myself in the head, and I was like, "This is going to hurt." And I didn't have enough friends to come to my funeral. I knew it was going to be messy. So what did I do? I called my dad. And I said, "Dad, I fucked up." And he'd been sober for first 14 years, and then he relapsed, and then, you know, came back and has been sober. So he's old in the game. And he said to me, "Son," over the phone, "son, that's a final solution to a temporary problem. Drink a bottle of gin and go to sleep. I was like, okay. So we hung up and I drank what I had and went back to sleep. I went to sleep. The day after, we kind of agreed that I needed treatment. So I went into treatment. And I was in treatment for 10 days. So I've been in treatment for 10 days. And I've been sober for 10 days. And I've been, you know. And then I get a call from Norway saying, are you sitting down? Yes, I am. Good. Because you're going to be a father. I was like, and my first reaction to that was not, oh, great, I'm really looking forward to this. How wonderful. My reaction to that was, how can you do this to me? Do you know what kind of situation I'm in? Yeah, I know. You know what she said then? I don't want you to be a part of it. I was like, what? I talked to my sponsor about it, and he said, well, you've been a part of it. It's, you know, you've been there, you've been doing this, and now you, if you want to be a part of it, you better work on it. I was like, okay. So I was going to go here, and so I had 28 days sober. I went, picked up my dog that I had, and I left it in Stockholm, and then I drove over here, and I was going to make things right. She's like, I'm sorry, I got a new boyfriend. I was like, yeah. You know how anxiety feels? You know, the real deal anxiety, when you cannot breathe really, when things really, really aren't that good in your life. You're sober, you have a family, you have people that love you, you have food, you're invited to a New Year's, sober New Year's Eve party, but nothing is good. You know that kind of anxiety? And I thought, oh, fuck, I'm going to go to a meeting. And I went to this, I was going to go to this AA meeting that was on Grüne Løkka. It was between Christmas and New Year's. But, you know, alcoholism apparently takes vacation during Christmas. So it was closed. And then it really hit me. And I was walking down this street on Grüne Løkka, I can't remember what it's called, never. And the lights were going like this. It was like, you know, Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. I was like, and I called my sponsor. I had a sponsor. And he said, and I said to him, you know what? Fuck this. I'm not doing it. I'm going to go and have a glass of wine. And he said, you know what? Is there a church nearby? I was like, I don't know. If you find one, see if it's open. And I found one, it was open, I went down in it, and I sat down on the third row, and I was crying. I prayed for two things, willingness and tillit, trust, willingness and trust. That was the only thing I begged on, or prayed for. And I was sitting there crying, and they were packing it up after this concert, and this, you know, this little lady comes up to me like this. She's like, hey, I can see you're hurting. I'm like, yeah. And what's up? And in 45 seconds, I managed to give her my life story. Today I have, 45 minutes, and I'm not going to be able to. Anyway, and she said, I get it. Is it okay if I pray for you? I said, I was in no position to say no. And I said, yes. And she prayed. for me, for the unborn child, and for my ex. She wished us well and happiness and joy. And she left and she says, I think this is going to be all right. And I walked out of there with an ounce more of integrity, ounce more of feeling okay. And then I called my sponsor again, and he said, now Jonas, man up, tell this woman that you're going home to Stockholm, come home, celebrate New Year's Eve with us. And that I did. Today, me and my ex are living 150 yards apart. I have my daughter 50% of the time, and we have a wonderful relationship, the three of us. She was right, that old woman. But then again, I think it was Ardnor who said it, God does not work here. I do. I work here. You do. But God does not work here. I don't know if it was you, but someone. So I have to do the work all the time. It's not like I can sit on my ass and hoping for the steps coming in into my body like through osmosis, and I'm like, ooh, great, I'm sober and it's fun and I'm great and I'm doing service and I'm having sponsees and exactly. Like the cork just put the plug in the jug and then you're done with it. It's not like that. Not at all. I need to do this all the time. Every day of my life. But I love it. Ah, that's a lie. I don't. Not every day. Like yesterday, I was on the phone with a friend. And she was like, so what are you doing? Well, I was just out shopping some breakfast. It's like, what the fuck? I'm not shopping for breakfast. I have a bag of chips and some Cokes in the bag. I'm going to go home and I'm going to eat chips. No, I'm not. I'm buying chips and Coke because I'm going to go home and sit down and watch a video. She's like, okay. She doesn't have that automatic lie in her. She's like, well, why did you say you were shopping for breakfast? And then I had to say, well, I felt embarrassed not to have any breakfast at home. Like, very, very, very special. And then I moved to Norway anyway, and I did the steps with a hardcore sponsor. And I am the kind of person that I cannot be patted on the back saying that this is going to be all right. You're going to be fine. Come back next week. I'm not at all. I've been to one meeting. Well, I think I've been crying at three meetings in my life. And one of those meetings were in the beginning. And I was getting all this attention from all the girls at the meeting. I was like, oh, let's cry some more. And they were giving me napkins and, you know, it's going to be all right. And then this idiot comes up. And he just pats me on the back. And he goes, dude, it'd be better when you stop self-loathing. Happy New Year. Like, are you kidding me? But he was right. I remember this other thing. I was at this meeting and I wasn't sober yet. And I came to this meeting and I talked my shit. I used the meeting as a waste bin. And I was just like, it's his fault. It's her fault. And every blah, blah, blah. It's the police, blah, 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 blah. And then this other woman comes up to me and she says, you know, Jonas, we're not very interested in hearing your shit. Until you want what we have, don't come back here. Don't waste our time. I was like, ain't this for everybody? I got the right to be here. Yeah, but then follow the rules. Do what we do. It's a monkey see, monkey do business. It's just, the trick is to choose the right monkey. If you choose the right monkey, you'll be all right. If you do what the right monkey does, you'll do just fine. And then I have this other thing. I called my sponsor up. I had 2 years of sobriety. And I said to him, and he was in a meeting, and I said to him, you need to call me now. Call me now. Bye. And he, you know, listened, and he called me up, and I gave him my problem. And he said, which was no problem at all, of course. And he said, Jonas, you have 2 years of sobriety, and I have my own life to run. Please don't bother me with this again. Goodbye. I was like, oh, you don't really understand. I don't think you've been in this deep shit that I have been. But he understood precisely what he was doing. He knew exactly. He was teaching me how to live. So then I called another friend in the fellowship, because I needed to debrief about what kind of an asshole my sponsor is. And I was having lunch with him, and I was talking, I bad-mouthed my sponsor. And after having done that for a while, he said, Jonas, I find this very interesting. I hear very much about your sponsor and very little about you. And the most interesting thing is that you bad-mouth a guy in a fellowship that saved your life. And that was two things in one day. I was like, oh no. Do I really need this? I don't know. And I moved here to Norway, and then I was blessed to be sober. I have my sponsor and have my friends and everything, and I found this group to become my home group, and I was lucky to be here from the beginning. And sometimes it was only me, and sometimes we were three people, and sometimes we were five, and if we were over 10, we were like, is this really happening? If we were this many in the beginning, it's like, oh no, this is not happening. This was huge for a speaker's evening. Today it's like, what, 25 people? It's just pretty normal. And it's been a great journey in sobriety for me. I think what has kept me sober is that I still feel like a newcomer. I still feel like I don't know anything. When I talk to Elling sometimes and I see what he's done in his life, I'm like, ooh, where am I? When I speak to Ardnor or people with just, you know, 2 months sobriety, they got more wisdom than I ever will have. So for me, it's very important to really remember my first step, because without it, nothing else matters. Nothing else can be achieved if not really, really accepting the first step. That is what I think. And then I also am very... What's the time?
12 past.
Back. 2 minutes more, maybe. Yeah. And what I really, really, really want to stress is the principle of anonymity. it's not just that we come here and we're anonymous. It's the principle of becoming anonymous towards my own feelings and my own fears. Am I going to let my own fears decide if I will let somebody come in here who doesn't have a sponsor? Am I going to let my own fear of rejection stopping me from approaching him or her and saying, hey, do you need help? Principles before personalities. That's what anonymity for me is. That we really dare stand up for our principles. That we say that what we see and feel instead of saying what we think is right. I have many times messed up during sobriety, and I still do, and I'm in the middle of a big mess up right now. I'm not proud about it or over it, but you know, it is what it is. It will end in a crash, but I'm used to it. I crash every third year, so this will be, it's 3 years is approaching, so I'm going to crash again. But I think I learned this much every crash, and then I go back to my therapist and, you know, intense my AA, blah, blah. But still, principles before personalities is so important within AA for me. It's the language of the heart. It's not the language of the mind. And I love this, and I hope you love this. And if I love it, I want to keep it. And if I want to keep it, I need to be honest with it. And to be honest with it means taking actions. And something might be wrong. And I hope that you take actions when you see that I'm wrong. Or anyone else. I could go along about what alcoholism is and blah, 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 but I'm sure there would be many speakers talking about that later on. And I'm very happy for this opportunity to be here at my home group speaking. And I don't know what you think about me, and I don't care, but I love you. Thank you.
Thank you.